GTD HD2, Jazz, Swing, Blues, Bop, and More, airing right now on HD2. For more information, go to WGTD.org or dial 564-3030.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and today our topic is Wisconsin politics. Stay tuned. This is going to be a lot of fun, and you're going to learn things you never imagined. We're on the phone with former Senator, State Senator Tim Cullen. He represented the 15th Senatorial District, which includes Janesville, Beloit, and parts of Rock County. And also in the studio with me is a current sitting senator, Bob Wersch, who represents this area of our listening audience. Senator Tim Cullen, good morning to you.
Good morning. Nice to be on.
Now, you wrote a book recently, which you called Ringside Seat, and it's subtitled Wisconsin Politics, the 1970s to Scott Walker. It's a fascinating read. It's published by Little Creek Press, and people can get it there. And you've established a foundation to actually donate the profits of this for a charitable purpose, I understand.
Yes, I started a foundation in 2008, actually. Provide scholarships for Janesville students of color who wanted to become teachers. And in exchange for helping them with the scholarship money, which is a big one, it's $5,000 a year, they agreed to pursue a teaching degree certificate and certification and come back and teach in Janesville. Janesville, like many communities, has become very racially diverse in its student population, 26%, yet the teachers are almost all white. And I just thought it was important that there be some diversity, not just in the student corps, but in the teacher corps as well. So that's where all the profits go. I don't make a dime on this, and I'm very, very happy that it's set up that way. It's the way I set it up.
Well, I hope you sell it very well. It's a fun read. Now, you've been in the state Senate, Senator Cullen, for quite a long time. I was looking at a statement on your retirement by the Democratic leader, Chris Larson, when in September of 2013, he lauded you for your 16 years of dedicated service to the state Senate. You came to the Senate, though, twice, didn't you?
Yes, I was there from, I was elected in 1974 the first time and served 12 years, almost five of them as majority leader. I then left the Senate for 24 years, largely to work in the private sector. And then, for a variety of unexpected reasons, ended up coming back, one in 2010, came back in 2011. I'd worked 20 years for Blue Cross in between there, and I'd retired from there and ended up coming back to the Senate. So quite a gap in service there.
Well, so you have an interesting history, and I think that's what makes your book probably so important and so fascinating a read. So you took a time in the Senate, then you went into the healthcare business, and then you wanted to ruin your mental sobriety by going back into politics, and you picked just the right time because you were in on the Act 10 action. And let's start with your experience of Act 10 and the tremendous battle that involved and divided this state in a way that I can't ever remember seeing, except maybe in the Joe McCarthy days, way back when.
Well, it certainly has angrily divided. It did angrily divide the state, and it's largely still angrily divided today. It's a little calmer than 2011, but it had a remarkable effect on people. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe that a Wisconsin governor, any Wisconsin governor, would, for his own political purposes, pursue an agenda item that was going to angrily divide the very people that he was elected to govern. So that part really actually came close to startling me. And it is why the 14 of us figured out that we had to wake up Wisconsin and give them a chance to know what was going on here. This was just not another governor who was going to govern somewhere near the center like his 12 predecessors had, all 12 of them back to 1950. But he was going to govern only from the right. And my main criticism, besides that one, which was the just angrily divide the state, was that there are challenges in public education today. There's no question about that. A lot of them related to the problems the students bring into the classroom from the life they're leading outside, and dysfunctional homes, et cetera. And those kinds of problems are real. They're serious. But Act 10 and taking away collective bargaining rights had nothing to do with dealing with those kind of real issues. And that's the part that I found most disconcerting.
Now, of course, your book can be viewed as highly partisan because you spend your lifetime in Democratic politics, and we don't want to cast aspersions on the Republican Party in terms of their motivations. Certainly I don't want to. But assuming that their motivations were for the best interests of the state, what was your objection, your primary objection to Act 10? What was that group really about? And I'm going to ask Bob to comment too, Senator Wirch, in a moment. But Senator Cullen, what was your major, what stuck in your craw about Act 10 the most?
What stuck in my craw the most was that, given the problems we face as a state, it was unnecessary. The governor said that he wanted to get some money out of public employees to balance the budget. And so he was going to get just public employees, have the taxes increased on them, to avoid raising taxes on anybody else, their taxes being paid more for health insurance and pensions. But that isn't what the bill did. The bill also stripped their collective bargaining rights away. And so it wasn't just about balancing the budget at all. And people who had been around politics for a long time around Madison, who didn't think that a political war was a good idea, knew that there was a very, very basic compromise sitting there at a table had the governor been interested. And that was that the public employees would pay more for their health insurance and their pensions, which their leadership had signaled that they'd be willing to do, in exchange for not taking away the collective bargaining. So he would have got the money to balance the budget, which was, he said was his goal, and left collective bargaining alone. That was the easy bargain that could have avoided all the turmoil, could have avoided probably the recalls, and left the state much less angrily divided than it is today.
Senator Wirch, you're currently representing the part, at least part of the more of the urban part of the Kenosha-Racine area today. What was it that you thought was the principal problem with the Act 10? Was it the same as Tim's?
Well, I agree pretty much with former Senator Cullen. First of all, the governor did not run on this. This was a complete surprise. We had a campaign, he didn't mention this, that he was going to declare war on the unions. But we should have known, because when Scott Walker was in the legislature years ago, he was a co-sponsor of the Move for Right to Work back then. And so I'm a believer that it was all a pretext, talking about other things, and their main goal in office for the last 6 years really has been to attack unions and attack working people. I mean, I've seen it as last week in the legislature. So that is their real goal, and I think that's unfortunate because Tommy Thompson and previous governors have gotten along very well in this state by compromising. But unfortunately, this group of Republican extremists in there now, compromise is a dirty word.
Well, if you have the majority, you can do whatever you want, I guess.
Right.
And they are, according to you. Now, with respect to Act 10, there was the move of the Democratic senators out of state, and that created a national news story, the likes of which I don't think I've ever seen come out of Wisconsin. It was as a former full-time journalist, I was just fascinated watching that coverage. Why did you all take off and leave? And maybe you could recount, former Senator Cullen, some of the experiences you had while you were in hiding in Illinois, if you want to call it that, or trying to avoid being brought back to Wisconsin was another concern of yours, it was reported in the press. What was that whole experience like for you?
Well, it was one I could have never imagined doing. But I have to say in the front end that what it was, in its essence, was a filibuster. It was a way to avoid a quorum so that the Republicans could not take up Act 10. They needed 20 votes for that special extra majority to take that bill up, and they only had 19. And as a former majority leader, I've know from heart some of the words in the Senate rules. And one of the key ones which apply here is, in the Senate rules, it says, a motion to adjourn is an order at any time. Now, what that means is that whenever, if we would have stayed and tried to filibuster the bill, the Republican majority leader who controls the body and has the votes could have stood up at any time and just said, I move that we adjourn, and could have cut off our filibuster, and that would have been it. So it was a form of filibuster, a very unusual one, one that met with much controversy, and I understand all that. But I also have to point out that the first Republican president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, back when he was in the Illinois State Assembly in 1841, was opposed to a banking bill that was going to be taken up there, and he wanted to avoid a quorum, the same thing we were trying to do in Wisconsin. So what the future Republican president of the United States did to avoid a quorum is he literally climbed out of the window of the Illinois State Assembly and escaped down the street to avoid a quorum. Now, I've never seen Governor Walker or any of his cohorts ever criticize President Lincoln for that act, but it's essentially the same thing we did.
Senator, what's the purpose of the filibuster, though? You were doing this for a reason. Why did it matter that you wanted to delay? Let's make that clear.
Okay. The purpose, in my mind, was that the people of Wisconsin, who, after having 12 straight governors who governed somewhere near the center, that they needed to know that they had a different governor this time without warning, as Senator Wirtz indicated, that without warning was going to govern from the right and was going to do something that was going to angrily divide the state in two, and it was unnecessary to balance the budget. And we thought the public needed to have a chance to be more aware of that.
If you hadn't left the state and done the actions you did, you felt that the public, this would have been done almost without public knowledge?
Right.
It would have been done the day we left.
Right.
They were going to take up the bill and pass it on February 17th, which is just 5 years and 2 days ago. They were going to take it up and pass it the day we left.
Bob, what's your recollection?
Well, that's the same thing I was going to say. When they want something, they can put it on fast track and get it through within a day or two, and that's what they wanted to do. And we went to Illinois to slow it down so people could understand what was in the worst bill I've ever seen in the legislature and get the public involved. And we did get the public involved.
People
came from all over the state to Madison to protest. It was an amazing exercise in democracy to see all those people being engaged, coming to the Capitol, some of them bringing their children, some of them pushing baby strollers, and it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in politics.
Perhaps one of the most amazing civic lessons I've ever seen in terms of the entire media that went around it. Thank you, Senator Wirtz. Senator Cullen, why don't you go on and tell us more about so you decided that you had to leave the state in order to slow the process down so that the public could be informed. Then what happened?
Well, we were down there for a few days, and I had the belief that it was completely necessary to go to Illinois. But I also thought that there was a time limit on staying there, that you couldn't just stay there and stay there and stay there, or we were going to lose more and more public support for doing it. And so we had not had any contact from the governor's office or majority leader about any discussions about any possible compromises in exchange for us coming back. And then I was contacted by first the Senate majority leader and then the governor's chief of staff, which set up two different meetings, where they came down and talked with us, with Senator Jelk and myself, about possible compromise to the bill in exchange for us coming back. Not in exchange for us coming back and supporting it. We were never going to be able to support the bill, just in exchange for coming back. And my thought was, where are we at right now? We're in Illinois. We're in the minority. And whenever we come back, we're going to provide the quorum they need, and they're going to pass the bill. So I thought if we could get some changes, just in exchange for coming back, that meant that we could at least save parts of collective bargaining. That was my main goal. And we met twice with the governor's chief of staff and deputy chief of staff. They drove down to meet with us. So they clearly wanted us to come back, I thought, and we never got there. The whole thing blew up, and they split the bill and passed it in a way they didn't need the quorum, so they didn't need us. They could do it with just 17 people, not 20. They passed the bill. But we came close, and we would have saved big pieces of collective bargaining if we could have made that deal. So that was what was going on. I can assure you that being in Illinois in late February and early March is not a vacation. We worked hard every day. We were talking to our staffs. We were talking to media. A lot of us were calling constituents who had contacted our office either for or against us being there, what we were doing. And we spent all day usually on the phone or a computer communicating with people.
You all took off rather quickly, and there was some concern about being pursued and dragged back to Madison to make a quorum call by the state police. Was there any truth to that?
Well, it turned out neither of those was true, but we didn't know that when we went. We did know if we went across the border that the Wisconsin State Police, State Patrol, Capitol Police could not go into Illinois and compel us to return to Madison. But we did think that if they found us somewhere in Wisconsin, that they could compel us to go back to Madison, to the Capitol. What I found out after we were down there, and I was talking with my sheriff in Rock County, who is, by the way, a Democrat, so for full disclosure, but also to the police chief at Janesville, who is not a partisan official. He's appointed by the Police and Fire Commission and the city council. That we found out that they could not, if we were in Wisconsin, they could not compel us to go back to the Capitol, because to compel you to go back to the Capitol, take you back there, they had to arrest you. And, you know, being in Wisconsin or being in your home and being anywhere in Wisconsin is not against the law.
No.
So they could not arrest us. But we did not know that when we went. I found that out several days after I was down there from talking to my sheriff and my police chief.
Now, as I recall, we had a lot of talk about how you were going to survive and be away that time in informal things I talked about with friends during that time. How did you manage? And I might remind our guests that we're talking today with former State Senator Tim Cullen, who's written a book called Ringside Seat, Wisconsin Politics, the 1970s to Scott Walker. It's a Democrat's view, and it's very interesting reading. Former Senator Tim Cullen, tell us, what was it like to try to just manage day-to-day, considering you just rushed out of the state? You didn't even have a suitcase packed.
Well, first of all, regarding the book, certainly my view of Governor Walker is my view, and therefore likely a Democrat's view, but there's a lot of the book that isn't even about Scott Walker. So it's really the history of the last 45 years, including the 5 years under Scott Walker. But answer your question. It was far easier for me because, after all, I live in Janesville, which is 14 miles from the state line, and we were always somewhere in northern Illinois. And then when I found out they couldn't arrest me, even if I was in Wisconsin, it was very easy for me to go back home, bring clothes home, and my wonderful wife could wash them, and I'd get new clothes and a home cooked meal, and get out of a hotel room. So it was far easier for me. For others, they were just down there for the duration. And in most cases, they had a spouse or a friend who would literally bring down new clothes and they'd wash them, or a lot of them had people coming down to bring them stuff that they needed. So that helped. And we stayed in the hotel rooms. A lot of them, I remember, at the La Quinta in Gurnee, not too far south of Kenosha. So everybody kind of made it work different ways. And usually had generally to do with how far you were from northern Illinois, where your home was in Wisconsin.
Now, you do mention that just now that you have many topics in your book, and I'd like to take up some of the other ones. We spent a lot of time on Act 10 because it is probably one of the biggest stories to come out of Wisconsin in decades.
That's for sure.
But there are some other issues that are really important that you explore in your book. And the next one I'd like to talk about is the mining and issue. There's maybe you could set up for our listeners who haven't followed this issue why mining in northern Wisconsin is suddenly an issue. Most people have lived in Wisconsin a long time. I've never even thought about mining as a part of our state's resource base.
Right, especially if you're from southern Wisconsin, like Rock County, where I'm from, there's no mining at all for minerals anyway. There's mining for sand pits for road construction and stuff. So I went to Madison in 2011, not even thinking about the issue of mining. But what happened was, sometime around 2010, this West Virginia, was really a coal company, not an iron ore mining company, Gogebe Taconite, their name, showed up in Wisconsin and was involved in Wisconsin politics in 2010, giving money. Most people didn't know that till later. And they wanted to dig the largest open pit iron ore mine in the world, way up just south of Lake Superior in Ashland County, in a not mountains but a high hill area called the Pinoki Hills. They're about 1,200 feet above Lake Superior is where the top of the Pinokis are. And they're a beautiful, beautiful place. And they wanted to dig this. The first phase was going to be a 4 mile long, half mile to mile wide, 1,000 foot deep pit to mine for iron ore. And nobody in the state was ready for this. That iron ore had been known to be there for over 100 years, but nobody had ever mined it. And it became a huge issue because the Gogebe Taconite started insisting on changing our law. And they wrote the bill that essentially the bill that finally passed in 2013 was written by the mining company.
Now, what's the nature of the land there, Tim?
It's just beautiful, gorgeous hills.
Is it public land? Is it belong to one of our Native American tribes?
The part they were going to mine is not controlled by the tribes. Some of it was public land. Some of it was private lands. There's homes there. People lived there. Not a whole lot of people lived in the Pinokis, but it's just beautiful for fishing, for hiking. It's a very popular tourist area. Right near the city of Mellon, people may be familiar where Mellon is, about 25 miles south of Ashland. But why the tribes were so much involved and concerned was that, first of all, the Pinoki Hills gets more precipitation than anywhere else in Wisconsin. The Department of Natural Resources has these weather stations that measure these things. And it's partly because of the lake effect of Lake Superior, but there's this enormous amount of water in the Pinokis, in streams and lakes and rivers and wetlands. And all of that water, the other thing that's complicated, I may be making this more complicated, but just south of the Pinoki Hills is a continental divide that happens to run east and west. We think of the Rocky Mountains, the continental divide running north and south. Well, that means that all the water north of that continental divide, which includes the Pinokis, all the water flows north, not like we normally think flows south into the Mississippi or something. It flows north into Lake Superior, and it flows eventually to all these lakes and streams and rivers, all eventually join the Bad River. And the Bad River is what carries all the water from the Pinokis north into Lake Superior, and the Bad River passes through the Bad River Reservation of the Lake Superior Chippewa, the Bad River Band of the Lake Superior Chippewa. So that was why they were so involved, was because of all this water, which is pure now. If it had iron ore mining waste in it, as would happen today as a result of the law that was passed without my vote or Senator Wirtz's vote or any Democrat's vote, that water would have been a lot less pure as it flowed to Lake Superior, and a lot less pure when it dumped into the largest clear water body in the world, which is Lake Superior. So it was, but all this hardly anybody knew about. I'd never been in the Pinokis. Most legislators had not. And we were invited up there by the local state senator. And I went up there, and I went up there three different times for 2 days each, twice in the winter and once in the summer. And I got to know the people who lived in and around the Pinokis, sat at their kitchen table, got a chance to meet and talk with members of the tribe, and had listening sessions up there to understand how people felt. And it changed. I started out my own view coming from Rock County, where we had, what you folks at Kenosha are very familiar with, we had, when you lost American Motors and Chrysler, et cetera, we had just lost General Motors at the very end of 2008, compounded by the national recession. Rock County had been, including my hometown Janesville, had been clobbered. And so I went to Madison thinking, you know, we've got to create some more jobs, not only in my county, but in the state. So my first reaction to all this, without knowing anything about the Pinoki, never been there, et cetera, never talked to anybody up there, was, well, if you can mine safely, it's jobs. And I think that was the attitude of the majority of the public on the front end of the issue.
It sounds like that when you met the people there, it had a profound influence on you. Senator Cullen, tell us a little bit more about how that went with you emotionally and in terms of just the simple logic of it as well.
Well, no question about it. I mean, to sit at the kitchen table of a family, a five-generation family, who, when you sat at their kitchen table, you could look up and see the Pinokis, and they were deeply worried that their well, as a result of a 1,000-foot-deep mine, was going to destroy the quality of the water in their well on their farm. And to sit there and listen to the family talk about it was really meaningful. Talk to the mayor of Mellon, who was, at the time, was fighting a serious fight with cancer, but was deeply involved in this thing. Joe Barabee is his name, and sit and talk with him. And then to meet Joe Rose, one of the elders of the Bad River Band, and have them say some very simple but so truthful things that when you hear them, that they call our planet Mother Earth, and they would say, and we need to treat Mother Earth the same way we're expected and should treat our own mother. And it was sort of that kind of simple common sense logic. And then to go up in the Pinokis, to go up to the source of the Bad River where it comes out of Lake Caroline, and it's just a little 3-foot-wide stream as it comes out of the lake, and I actually drank some of the water myself right out of my own hands up there on a cold February day. It was very meaningful, and to understand that the people up there, while they wanted jobs, but not at the expense of their environment and of clean water, and to get that. And then find out that the mayors of the nearby cities, the mayors of Mellon and Ashland and Bayfield and one other one up there I can't think of, that all the mayors eventually came out against this was very telling to me, because if this was sort of 50-50 in our city, my guess would be the mayors would probably keep their head down. But when the mayors come out against it, that told me that they were representing a significant majority of their communities, or they might not have got involved. So all that, to go out to the Bad River Band Reservation, five of us senators went out there on a Friday night for 3 hours just to listen to the elders talk about Mother Earth and what a clean environment means to them and means to everybody, not just Native Americans, and to realize that this issue was not the least bit racial. A lot of people a little bit older or listening can remember the spearfishing issues back in the late 80s and 90s.
Very controversial, yes.
Very controversial and very racial. It really was Native Americans against the white people up there. This one, we found, was not the least bit racial. The Native Americans and the other white people up there were on the same side against it. So that was kind of interesting thing to learn, and you had to go up there and spend time with them to understand that it wasn't the least bit racial.
Former Senator Cullen, I'd like to know what you're aware of in terms of what the future is going to be for that act, that mining act, and mining up there. Are you aware of any recent developments, and what do you think is going to happen in terms of the future? Do you think there'll be more attempts at legislating on this in the future?
Well, I hope so, because I hope we reverse the law that we passed in 2013. But as to the mine site, of course, the iron ore is still there. The Gugibi Taconite, the mining company that wanted to do this, who have now left the state, they just had bought the rights to mine. They didn't own the land, but they bought the mining rights, and those leased them, and they gave up their lease, so now they are out and gone and don't have any leasing rights there at all. But the land itself is owned by a couple companies, one in Minnesota, one down in Houston, And they have already approached people up there this past summer to talk about the possibility of starting an effort to maybe mine there in the future. But they're actually going about it in a little smarter way. They're talking to the people up there first before it. And they don't have a new company that wants to mine. They could, they're mining companies, so they could mine it. But bottom line is that as long as the iron ore is in the ground, there's always a the possibility that someone else, some other company, will come along and want to mine it.
I understand that
iron ore prices are low now, but it would take iron ore prices today don't matter. Some people think it helps not have a mine, but a mine, if they started the day to want to do it, it would be a seven to ten years before they, if they got a permit, it would take 7 to 10 years. And so it doesn't really matter in terms of mining or not mining what the iron ore price today is. It would matter what it is 7 to 10 years from now.
I understand that you're going to be in Kenosha this weekend on Saturday. You're going to be talking about your book, The Ringside Seat, Wisconsin Politics, The 70s to Scott Walker. And don't take questions. That's going to be as part of a Democratic Party event, apparently, at the Union Club on 30th Street and 39th Avenue. But that's, you'll be there from approximately 1 to 4 this Saturday. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, I will. And I'm really looking forward to it. I love talking about the book for people who want to hear about it. And, of course, I love selling the book and signing it if they want me to. And I also point out that all the profits from the book are going to a scholarship foundation that I started in Janesville.
Right.
Not a dime is going in my pocket. So I feel a little more comfortable kind of pushing the book and urging people who want to read it to buy it, because I'm able to assure them that there's no profit going in my pocket.
Now, related to the mining is water purity and water quality in general. And there's been a lot of discussion about that in terms of companies coming in to bottle water in various parts of the state. You mentioned water purity as an issue in your book. How do you feel about the outlook for our water quality in the future here? Do you think that there's legislation that we still need to change or enact for the first time?
I don't know of any. I'm mostly worried about this effort, which looks like it's going to fail in this legislative session, to change the law to allow communities to sell their water rights to publicly traded companies. Today, the law, you can do it today. In fact, the city of Superior has done it. But you can't do it today. The municipality can't sell their water right, the operation of their water systems to a private company without a public referendum where the people get a chance to say yes or no. My guess, after Flint, Michigan, they probably say have a big no to the idea. But there was a bill introduced that took out the requirement that there be a public referendum. I think that was just like one of the most tone-deaf proposals I've ever seen, how you could propose to do that to the communities of Wisconsin. In the context of the time that we're learning about what happened in Flint, Michigan, I thought was incredible. And I think finally that somebody in Madison and the majority party woke up and said, this is not a good idea to do now. But like other issues in the legislature, they really never die for good. They're just dead until the next session.
Now, speaking of the next session and issues in the legislature, the state finances are always a number one concern of the representatives and the senators and certainly the voting public. You spend a lot of time talking about the state finances. What is your evaluation of the state finance? What's your critique of the way we're running the state in terms of financial?
Well, I don't like a lot of how the money's being spent. I don't like it being spent on private schools, taken from public schools and spent in private schools where there's no evidence, there's no proof that children are getting a better education at the schools where they're going to as opposed to the public schools that they came from. This was supposed to be a pilot project only in Milwaukee when it started 20-plus years ago, and now it's become statewide. And it's just draining money from the public education system, and it means that the taxpayers are basically paying for two school systems when they hardly can afford to pay for one. That bothers me greatly. Literally hundreds of millions of dollars a year, which should go to public education, are now going to private schools where students can take the public money with them to a private school, basically. It bothers me greatly that we will not address our infrastructure needs and transportation and other infrastructure needs, and particularly as it relates to our roads and bridges and highways, that this administration refuses to consider any kind of transportation tax increase to pay for our infrastructure needs. And what that has resulted in is that, yes, they can say they didn't raise the gas tax or they did raise any license fees, but what they have done is they've increased bonding, which is borrowing. I talk about that in the book. I say in the book that we should not allow elected officials to use the word bonding. We ought to make them use the word borrowing. I think that hits home with citizens. Bonding sounds kind of okay, or, you know, but borrowing is very clear what that means to every citizen. So what we're doing is we're borrowing to pay for infrastructure costs that we should be paying for with ongoing transportation revenues, taxes, if you want to call them, on gas. And the other thing they're doing besides the borrowing, they're also taking money from the general tax fund, general fund, which would go for public education and other programs in the state. It's money not intended for transportation. Transportation has its own funding mechanism. But they're taking money from the general fund to pay for transportation, and that's money that otherwise would one of the biggest place it would go would be public education. So, you know, I think their priorities are way off what I think the majority of citizens want.
Well, at least we're paying our bills, unlike the state of Illinois, right?
Yeah. Well, and we're starting in a very different place. We've had, and Governor Walker inherited them, completely fiscally sound pension plan that state employees are in, and municipal, local, school district employees are in. It is fiscally sound, as which is exactly the opposite of Illinois. But, I mean, they've built up this problem for at least a couple decades down there without anybody in public office dealing with it. Now they've got a huge mess. On that one big area, we are solid. We've been solid for a long, long time, long time prior even to Governor Walker. And so I that helps us be much more fiscally sound. And I think governors of both parties overall have tried to, you know, we have a law which says that the law says we must have a balanced budget. So sometimes they are a little bit cute with how they define a balanced budget. You can, what I mean by being cute, you can overestimate revenues and you can underestimate expenses and make a budget look balanced. Eventually it catches up with you, of course.
Senator, you've been in the state Senate twice now. You had that interregnum in the private sector for a while.
20 years.
Right, 20
I was gone actually for 24 years altogether.
How do you...
In between.
You have a really great vantage point to compare and contrast what you've seen in the past. We talked about that a little bit earlier. What do you see as your outlook for the future for politics, at least in our state? Do you think that we're coming to a point where we're going to start to get along together soon and be listening to each other, or is this hyper-politicism, this hyper-split going to continue in your view?
Well, first of all, I sure hope it doesn't, but it has gone on now for 5 years, and this hyper-split exists in, you know, most of the rest of the country, although there's some polling data which says it may be more hyper-split here than in Wisconsin than anywhere, but it sure is here. I hope it gets better. I talk in the book about how the previous 12 governors governed somewhere near the political center, and now Governor Walker just governed from the right. And we need to get past this era. We need to get into a post-Walker era, and get a governor or two in a row that goes back to the judgment of all of Walker's 12 predecessors, 6 Democrats and 6 Republicans, which is the what we came to expect. And what they did was they governed somewhere near the center. Republican governors sort of center right, Democratic governors kind of center left. And that's where I think Wisconsin wants to be. I think that's why his approval rating has dropped to 38%. because I think people kind of long for that. And if we can get back to that, I think a lot of this acrimony between citizens, I think, will diminish. But it's not going to happen overnight. It's been going on for 5 years.
Some of the political scientists and analysts say that the way our districts are written and laid out in the state, many call it gerrymandering because some of them look so peculiar, has been a real problem in both in terms of having a healthy politics, and many of the senators and legislators I've talked to around our southeast corner of the state are publicly and privately are unhappy with the way it happens and with the results in their own areas. Do you see any change coming in that, a more logical, a less partisan redistricting effort in the future? Is there pressure building for that in and out of the legislature?
I think it's gradually building outside the legislature. I've been going around talking about this when I was with Republican Senator Dale Schultz. When we were in office, it's the one issue we've both stuck with even after we left office. We've spoken in several locations around the state during 2015 and early this year. So it is a big problem. It's a problem Wisconsin never had before. And so I don't think the public was ready for it when it happened in 2011. Because you can't, it's called gerrymandering, which you draw the lines just to benefit one political party. And the reason why it never happened before was that in the year after the census, for the last 50 years, state government had divided government. In other words, neither party controlled the governorship and both houses of the legislature. So if you have divided government, you don't end up with these gerrymandered districts drawn to benefit just one party. But that's what happened in 2011 for the first time. We had just one party in control. And we have, by some scholars' estimates who have looked at these across the nation, these gerrymandered states, we have the most Republican gerrymandered state in the nation. Now, neither party is pure on this. Rhode Island has the most gerrymandered Democratic state in the nation. So it's an issue of the abuse of power. It isn't a particularly partisan issue. It just looks that way depending on which party did it in which state. But you have a great example of it right there in Racine and Kenosha County. The Kenosha State Senate seat has historically been held by Democrats for a long time, but some races have been somewhat competitive. But the Racine County state senate seat, and they were just county, Racine County was one state senate seat and Kenosha the other, a little bit of Walworth sometimes in both of them. But what they did was, rather than have an east-west line dividing the two state senate districts, so that there was, Racine district was very competitive. It's had Democratic state senator, then Republican state senator, then back to a Democrat, back and forth, but it was competitive. What they did was, rather than have an east-west line divide the counties, they made it a north-south line, which created a completely safe, for as a practical matter, in a general election, Democratic seat of the two largest cities we're seeing in Kenosha, but then created an almost completely safe Republican state senate seat composed of the rural western parts of Racine and Kenosha County.
Now, I haven't seen a lot of people really praising that, and I'm so glad you got a chance to tell us a little bit about how that works. I want to thank you so much, Tim. Our guest today has been former State Senator Tim Cullen, who has an exciting and interesting book out, Ringside Seat, Wisconsin Politics, published by the Little Creek Press. I encourage our listeners to study it, listen to the other side, get involved, get informed, and be engaged. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Althaus, honoring personal legacies in the circle of life. They believe that every detail counts and every memory matters. Piasecki Althaus is located in Kenosha on 39th Avenue, serving the community since 1931. Support comes from Gateway Technical College. Career opportunities abound in marketing, including public relations, advertising, promotion, and international marketing. Improve your degree through an articulation agreement with one of 35 colleges and universities. Check out marketing at gtc.edu. WGTD is on your smartphone. For local news and the rest of the mobile version of our website, log on to WGTD.org. For live audio streams of WGTD 24/7 Jazz.